Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 111 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast exclusively available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. This week's episode, I'm proud and happy to be joined by Matt Trueblood from Baseball Prospectus and the author of Penning Bull. And we do a nice preview of the Cubs and Nationals series in the National League Division Series, which gets going here on Friday this upcoming week. Really wanted to break down the series. I wanted to get a little bit of a perspective of the Cubs team, who's been so good in the second half. And also, I don't want to say an outsider's perspective, but somebody who doesn't follow the Nationals 162 games like I do, and gets a little bit of a perspective of the team from a different point of view and an expert's point of view. So I really appreciated Matt coming on. He was a terrific guest, and it's kind of amazing. I haven't had him on the show before, but he does a great job breaking down the series. One other note that I want to make, and I never do make this show political by any stretch of the imagination, but we recorded this episode just a few hours after the tragedy in Las Vegas, and on purpose, we do not discuss that during the episode. Don't know the facts, don't know what kind of has gone on, and we're just a few hours away from that tragedy, but obviously our thoughts, our prayers, and good vibes and all that good stuff go out to everybody there. And it wasn't for a lack of not having it on our mind. It was more a decision that we want to make this a baseball show and lighthearted, and you know, maybe a distraction from some of the tough things in our world. So once again, thanks to Matt for joining me. Thank you for downloading. And with that, here is our interview.
Baron. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The People's Podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that.
And now on the line with me, I am proud to have writer at Baseball Prospectus and the author of Penning Bull. I have Matt Trueblood on the line with me. Matt, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Hey, Ryan. Happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
As I was saying to you off air, it's just amazing to me that I haven't had you on the show. It's you know, we've been friends. We've talked on Banished to the Pen many times, but I was kind of going through my, you know, Rolodex of who I've had on the show, and I realized I hadn't had you on. So thank you first and foremost for making your debut appearance.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I'm not a Nationals expert by trade, so it was good to get a chance to take a deep dive on them, and I'm looking forward to talking about this series that's coming up.
Well, there's a perfect segue, so I'm going to take it, and I think it's time to jump in, because I wanted to bring you on this episode to talk a little bit about this upcoming Cubs and National Series. When I think of Cub fans, you're the first guy I kind of tend to think of. So first and foremost, just the Cubs, I don't know that I want to say that I've overlooked them this season in the midst of all the many storylines, but they ended up 92-70, and I think they had one of, if not the best record in all of baseball in the second half.
Yeah, they came on really strong, and I think, you know, it's always hard to quantify or, you know, weigh how much to grant a World Series champion a hangover period, or, you know, just to wonder whether that's something that just happens and teams will get over, or whether it's a sign of a flaw if you can't handle the series and then come back to next year clicking. But with such a young team, especially, and with a pitching staff that is not as young and had been through a couple of long seasons in a row, I think it makes some sense that they needed some time to get fully healthy, needed some time to, you know, move past all the sort of early season distractions and sort of gel. And once they did, it's been, yeah, they've been right up there in this remarkably deep top tier of teams that we have in the league this year.
Now, was there one moment, game, spot, whatever the word is I'm looking for, where things turned around for the Cubs? Because I feel like, and this is a little bit anecdotal, but it feels like around July 4th, you guys were still a 500 baseball team, and then to finish 22 games above 500, I mean, something must have clicked.
Yeah, well, I think it falls unusually neatly right at the All-Star break. It was over that break that they traded for Jose Quintana. Of course, coming out of the break, they had this weird game in Baltimore where they jumped out to a huge lead, and they gave it all back on their pitching staff, who have struggled with walks intermittently throughout the season. Had a really bad night of them that night, and it ended up tied. And then in the top of the ninth, Addison Russell untied it with a home run. And when they won that game, they won the next five. Quintana had this brilliant debut. Mm. And even though there have been ups and downs since then, they kind of just started rolling. It was like, okay, now it's go time.
So what is, I guess now I want to ask you kind of what are the strengths and weaknesses of the team? I don't want to say that too. I mean, I think everybody knows the Cubs fairly well that's listening to this, but I do maybe a little bit for the, you know, people that aren't following the Cubs quite as well.
Well, the strengths are depth and positional talent, you know, just broad strokes. I mean, firstly, there is no team in the league that turns a higher percentage of ground balls by opponents into outs than the Cubs do. And they're going to field their A1 infield defense just as they did every game last postseason, just about every day starting in this series with Chris Bryant, Addison Russell, Javier Baez, Anthony Rizzo. Not a lot gets through those four. That's an incredible base to begin with. But really, they thrive because there aren't holes in their lineup. There aren't weak spots in their rotation. You know, in looking, just kind of researching in advance of the playoffs, I went to Baseball Prospectus and ranked all pitchers with at least 100 innings by CFIP, which is our estimator of true talent based on it's basically like a weighted FIP metric that also takes into account some of the things that a pitcher does in terms of controlling hard contact and stuff like that, but obviously weighs heavier the things that they control more, that kind of thing. And if you look at that metric, if you just compare the Nationals rotation to the Cubs, you've got Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg who are truly elite. And the Cubs don't have anyone who's up on that tier. But then all four of the Cubs' projected playoff starters fall comfortably into the space between Scherzer and Strasburg, and then Gio Gonzalez and Tanner Roark. So that's kind of how this team is shaped. It's a lot of, they may not have the top-level superstars, but they have so many good players, and they just keep coming at you. And that's really all over the roster. The weaknesses of the team this year especially are the bullpen, where they thought they had a lot of depth and they even added some around the trade deadline, but they've had a lot of issues with control, with walks among that core, and they've also had issues catching fly balls. They're just really an average defensive team on fly balls, and a lot of that goes down to not only having Kyle Schwarber in left field, he's struggled. I think he's not the abysmal defender that a lot of people picture, but he's been pretty poor, and a lot of it has to do with still recovering from his pretty nasty knee injury, and his speed hasn't really bounced back. And then the fact that because they needed a better leadoff hitter, they've had to play John Jay kind of a lot in both center and in left, and he's not a great defensive outfielder. So those are the weak spots, but those are obviously pretty good weak spots to have if you have to have them, because that relief corps still strikes out a ton of people, and if Schwarber and Jay are both playing against right-handed pitchers, Jay's going to get on base a ton, and Schwarber's going to hit for a ton of power, and you can kind of make up for what those players give away. So it's a very deep and well-rounded team, and rather than kind of a stars and scrubs, you know, dynamic, that's really how they tick.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit more about the starting rotation, because I was speculating on this yesterday with a fan as well. Do you see the Cubs going with a three-man rotation in this series, or do you expect them to go with a four-man?
They'll definitely use four. Jose Quintana, his last few starts were brilliant, and they really like the sort of swagger, the different things he can do, the way his four-seamer and his sinker play off of each other, which I think is a dynamic he's still honing. But he has that high fastball and then the curveball off of it that is the rage of the league this year. Kyle Hendricks has been 2016 Kyle Hendricks, basically, throughout the second half. So there's no pushing either of them out of the way. John Lester scuffled for a while, but his last two starts essentially figured it out. He had sort of an epiphany in talking through things with the Cubs' sort of hive mind of pitching game planners, the pitching coach Chris Bosio, catching coach Mike Borzello, and Wilson Contreras, and they figured out, you know, he was pitching too much to scouting reports, to hitters' weaknesses, and not being himself enough, getting busting right-handers inside, going to the back foot to get swings and misses, things like that. He's corrected it, and he looks, you know, more or less like himself again. His velocity's a little down, but John Lester's never thrived on velocity. It's about movement. It's about a repeated delivery. It's about command. He has those things back. So that really just leaves Jake Arrieta, and while his hamstring issue is something they're going to monitor and manage, and he may not start early in the series, I think they still view him purely as a starter. And when you have a guy who's got sort of a, especially a non-arm related injury, and you're trying to help him maintain that, it's not going to help anything to say, well, you're in the bullpen and we might call on you on this night or we might not.
Yeah, fantastic.
They'll want to keep him on a rotation. So, yeah.
So is that how you're expecting it to go? Is those four in that order?
That's been the talk of the city for the last several days, and I think almost every day the consensus, to the extent to which one exists, changes. At this point, just because Lester looked good a couple of times and they know what he is and how he handles the postseason and all of it, I would guess Lester's the game one starter. And then it'll probably be Hendricks, just because they won't want to double up on the lefties and they want to save Arrieta and give him a little more time to he's going to throw a simulated game Wednesday, and they want to give him more time to get feedback from that, manage the hamstring, all of it. So I would think it'll go Lester, Hendricks, maybe Arrieta, Quintana, maybe Quintana, Arrieta, kind of just depending on how Arrieta's feeling.
Gotcha. Let me flip the conversation now, if I can, to the Nationals, because at times I feel, obviously, I'm a little too close to the team, watching them every day and the like. So I'd love to get your take, just the, you know, thousand miles away kind of take on what's going on with the Washington Nationals in 2017.
Well, I think they're a very talented team, you know, and obviously they've achieved a lot by winning 97 games. There are things this team does very well, and again, there are definitely those top-level talents. The Scherzer and Strasburg, Bryce Harper's fully healthy, which I'm sure we'll be talking plenty about, and Anthony Rendon. Those guys are exceptional. I do still see, I don't even know if I want to call them weaknesses, but there are things that this team hasn't proven yet. If you go on Baseball Reference and split out offensive performance by the style of pitcher you're facing, power pitchers are classified as having among the top third in the league in walks and strikeouts added together, and finesse pitchers among the bottom third, then average. The Nationals really struggle against power pitching. By that, you know, sort of odd definition. But the point is that they really beat up on these four teams in their division, that three of them had bad pitching staffs to start the year, and one was so decimated by injuries that that ended up being the case for them too. And you look around the Nationals lineup, and it's not that any of these guys haven't proven they can beat up even good pitching. It's just that there's some question marks about just how much are they going to be able to do that. They haven't gotten to do it a lot this year, and when they have had those opportunities, when they face teams who strike batters out the way the Cubs do, who can run out a depth of talent such that you never really get that back-end starter who's just throwing 90 without a ton of command, when they face teams that don't have those weaknesses, like the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, it's been pretty ugly. So we'll just have to see how that goes. They're a very talented team, but there's the questions of health, and then there's the questions of can they perform against a higher level of competition than they've seen for most of the season.
Just from that answer, it sounds like you're a little negative on the Nationals, even though they're a 97-win team. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you are a skeptical, maybe is a better way to put it.
Yeah, well, and I don't want to pretend as though they're not a 97-win team. You know, is that they took care of business. You can only play the opponents you play, and it's probably a little bit harder to handle those more talented pitching staffs when you only get to see them every now and then. And then in between you have 3 weeks where you're only facing the Jeremy Hellickson's of the world, you know?
That is a great point. That's a fantastic point.
Yeah. I do think there are weaknesses here that the season didn't tease out a whole lot. I think it's going to be interesting to see how certain dynamics play out. They drew a really bad matchup. And one thing that I think they need to be complimented on is after they clinched, they didn't exactly go into we clinched mode. The Nationals kept playing, kept running out the regulars pretty regularly for the final couple of weeks of the season. And in so doing, they tried to run down the Dodgers. The Dodgers got right, so that didn't work out. Didn't even come that close to working out. But if they continued to struggle, that would have been huge. Getting to not play the Cubs in the first round was a big advantage that the best record in the National League was going to hold, because this team is really dangerous, and they don't have those kind of soft spots in the armor. I don't think the Nationals are a bad team or weaker than their record states or anything like that. I think I probably am more down on them in this matchup against the Cubs than a lot of people are.
That's really interesting, because I want to focus on that point, because in a lot of ways I think, and I don't want to speak for an entire fan base, but I think that we feel like maybe we drew the best matchup we could have in the Cubs rather than either Colorado or Arizona in some ways. I mean, Arizona's been fantastic all year. They may be a more difficult – in some ways I could see the argument that they're a more difficult matchup, but it kind of goes to a bigger point. There are a lot of really good teams in the National League this year.
Yes. Yeah, and that's really the thing to keep repeating over and over, is that unless the Rockies beat the Diamondbacks, unless the Twins beat the Yankees, we're going to have division series chock full of teams that would have been like on the caliber of number one seeds in any of the past 3 or 4 years.
I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that there's really not a bad team in this bunch, and that's why you're going to have a lot of fan bases maybe going in feeling confident and then getting upset and wondering why, or going in feeling sort of nervous just because they're really close to their team, but then watching them surge through a couple of series. It's going to be almost more random than usual just because the sheer level of competition throughout these playoffs for every team in every series is going to be sky high.
Yeah, I mean, except for the Twins, I really think we're getting the 9 best teams in baseball right now. And that's pretty cool in the playoffs. I mean, whether or not, I don't know who wins Arizona, Colorado, obviously, but it's going to be loaded. And to your point, I think there are going to be a lot of very down fans this year because their teams are really good and they're going to lose. I mean, we're going to have some very disappointed fans in the National League, and whether it's the Cubs, the Nationals, the Diamondbacks, or the Dodgers, for goodness sake. I mean, it's going to be brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to it. I mean, and especially because there are teams everywhere in this group, especially on the National League side, where of the Cubs, Nationals, and Dodgers, there's not one team there whose fan base is going to be satisfied that they won their division and won it in pretty impressive fashion if they don't at least win a series and probably go on to the World Series. Like, that's the level we're at. These teams, fan bases, all expect playoff success. That's the bar for any of them to call their season really a success. And there's some legitimacy to that, but it's an impossible standard, obviously, for all of them to meet.
I can't believe we've gotten this deep into the conversation and we haven't talked about Bryce Harper, but what are you – I don't even know how to word the question right, but what are you expecting from Bryce? I mean, I went to the game yesterday, and I will say the swing looked better, and he ran the bases pretty well, but, I mean, we're asking a lot of a guy that missed almost 8 weeks of a season to come back and be a middle-of-the-lineup MVP-type player.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's probably the thing that'll swing the series, right? If it's not that, it's going to be the hamstrings of Scherzer and Arrieta. But if Bryce Harper is fully Bryce Harper, the national lineup is really, really tough for the Cubs to get through. And if Bryce Harper is healthy enough to play but not healthy enough to be himself like he was for so much of last season, for instance, it's a totally different dynamic. I mean, you're talking about Ryan Zimmerman is he's fine, but I don't have to tell you or any of your listeners that since about mid-June, he's not been the guy that's represented by his season numbers. He's been 320 OBP and like a 475 flux. He's been fine. Without Harper, the guy, the hammer, the person who sets this lineup off isn't there. So a lot rides on that, and we don't really have a good way to know. You know, even over six games or whatever he's played, you just kind of have to look at him and say, well, he's looking better and he's got to get his timing back. Just about anyone does. And maybe it's going to be fine. You know, I don't want to. He came back from a knee injury, a left knee on a left-handed hitter. Kyle Schwarber is dealing with the same, obviously a much more severe injury. And it was a different kind of comeback for him. And their swings don't really work the same, so I don't want to draw too strong a parallel. But certainly Schwarber came back and hit just fine in the World Series last year. I think Harper's perfectly capable of that, of even more than that. But it's I don't know if we have any good way of telling whether it's going to happen or not.
Yeah, as strange as it is, he might be the only one in this series of hitters that might benefit from having 5 days off. Because it gives him five more days to rest and get that knee right, whereas everybody else will have their timing messed up and his is already messed up to a certain degree.
Yeah, no, and I think it's that only complicates things, and the new playoff format is strange in that way because it's like we know that this guy's still kind of hurt, or you know, he came back and said, "Look, I'm not 100%, but I'm close enough to play," and we hear that and we go close enough to play or close enough to play like Bryce Harper.
Right.
Exactly. 5 more days could change the answer to that question. And if it does, it changes the whole complexion of the series. So yeah, tough to tell.
Let me use that as another segue and let's talk about some of the storylines going into this series. Cause there are, I mean, every series is going to have a ton of them, but this series really seems to have a lot of storylines. I mean, we have Bryce Harper. We have Bryce Harper and Chris Bryant, their friendship. We have the Cubs coming off a World Series and had a bit of a hangover in the first year. How are they going to respond this year in the playoffs? The Nationals have had playoff difficulties. Can they get through the first round? I mean, what are you looking at in this series, I guess, is the way I want to frame that question.
You know what I really love? I love the interplay of the managers and the, well, I guess kind of the second baseman. So it's just this weird reminder of how much baseball rides the tide of fortuity. I mean, Joe Maddon managed Mike Rizzo when Rizzo was in the scrubs coming up, you know, low minors. They have a relationship going back that far, and they like each other. If instead of having an opening shortly before and shortly after Maddon was a managerial free agent, the Nationals had had an opening that fall, there's every chance that Joe Maddon's managing the Nationals right now instead of the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, the Cubs, of course, have this history with Dusty Baker that I'm sure will be played up a little bit narratively. Nothing the way it would have if the Cubs hadn't won the World Series last year. But, you know, it's the Nationals ended up with Baker. And Baker, Dusty Baker could be what loses this series for the Nationals. I mean, I'm sure Nationals fans are already living in a mild fear of that. Let me add some numbers to that terror. The Cubs are 15th in MLB in OPS against starters the first time through the order. They're 16th in MLB in OPS against starters the second time through the order. They're second with a 912 OPS the third time they see starters in a game. And again, preaching to literally the choir, but Dusty doesn't list his starters after two times through the order. Does he have that club in the bag in the playoffs? Will the fact that Scherzer's hamstring is potentially unstable help him change his mindset about that? Or are we going to see the guy who has run out more of his pitchers for 100-plus pitches in more starts this year than any other manager in baseball? Because if we do, the fact that the Nationals beefed up their bullpen with so many trades over the course of the season isn't going to matter, and they're going to lose in the most frustrating way possible. And then just one more thing is the, and again, it goes back to this fortuity. It's just timing and luck, is that here the Cubs have Ben Zobrist, who's going to kind of float around for them and will start more than he doesn't, but might not start every game for sure. Well, he turned down the Nationals, and it was crushing for a few weeks, and then they signed Daniel Murphy, and wow.
Right.
So it's just weird the way things work out, right? I mean, one thing so clearly favors the Nationals, and the other so clearly favors the Cubs, because they have this major advantage on the top step of the dugout that could spin the series.
Hmm. All right, a little bit of rapid fire, I guess, to a certain degree to finish this out, but who is the key player for each team in the series?
I think, well, taking Harper out of the equation.
Right, I was going to say that. We already kind of covered him, so let's take him out, please.
Right. I think the Cubs tend to have some trouble against guys like Trey Turner, who can just go wild. Can hit the ball hard and run fast and take over a game a little bit offensively. He's a guy I would keep an eye on the Cubs side. Maybe Wilson Contreras. The Nationals will pitch carefully through the gauntlet of Bryant and Rizzo. And then the Cubs have not a weakness. You know, they don't have a star like Matt Wieters at the bottom of their order or anything. But there's a sort of softish underbelly toward the middle lower part of their order. If Contreras, who has been good since he came back from his injury, but it's mostly been because he's very willing to take his walks and he's hitting line drives, he hasn't had that the exceptional power that he displayed in the few weeks before he got hurt. If he can get that back and make them pay for those walks before it gets to the point where they might be able to wriggle off the hook, that could mean five or six extra runs for the Cubs over the course of the series, and that changes everything. If he doesn't, then they might be able to pitch. You know, there's going to be some jams that the Nationals get out of. Cubs will be left frustrated, and then every jam that they avoid is one step closer to Dusty getting to that bullpen, even though he's not that good at getting to that bullpen.
Once again, I want to take Dusty out of this question if I can, but the Cubs / the Nationals lose this series because of fill in the blank.
The Cubs would probably lose it because their starting pitching wobbled off the track. For the most part, they've had good starting pitchers, and these are four guys in whom it's easy to have a lot of confidence. And yet, Lester went through that sort of, it was really a couple of months bracketed around a short stint on the DL of just not pitching well, not being himself and not having that good command that he needs. If that returns, or if Arrieta's hamstring starts balking and they have to go to John Lackey in the third inning of game three or game four, that's going to significantly dampen their chances. On the national side, it could come down to the defense and the fact that they're a fine defense, but there are holes. And if the Cubs are able to counteract the thing where everybody against Gio Gonzalez, like, everyone's hit the ball to the left side this year. I know Mark Simon documented this. That's the good side of the defense, and then the other side is not so good. And the Cubs have worked hard this year to be able to attack the whole field and move the ball when they need to. And if they can do that, the Nationals defense is susceptible.
Let me ask the question in the flip side. The Nats win, Cubs win because fill in the blank.
If the Nats win, I think it'll be because Scherzer and Strasburg dominate. I mean, that's where they live, that's where they eat. And, of course, that's middle of the order, whether Harper is at the top of his game or not. Murphy and Rendon are very, very dangerous. The top of their roster will thrive and they'll succeed, or they won't, and they probably won't succeed. The Cubs win the series just by keeping everything on the level, and the bullpen could really step up. I mean, again, while the starting pitching is sort of uncertain and the Cubs need to be able to depend on something good from them, Man's not going to be afraid to turn games over to the bullpen in the fifth inning or something. And if that works out, if those guys come in throwing strikes, CJ Edwards and Justin Wilson, they're incredibly hard to hit. If they come in not throwing strikes, everything goes sideways in a hurry.
Final question, prediction on the series.
I think the Cubs are going to win it. I think that's probably going to go against the grain a little bit, and it'll certainly be hard for Nationals fans and for the organization to swallow if it happens. Again, I think there's nothing to be ashamed of there. They won a ton of games and played a great season despite a whole bunch of injuries. But the Cubs are not only the defending champions for a reason, but ramping up into their full, you know, maybe best selves right now. I don't know that I feel like the Nationals are clicking on all cylinders in the same way. That it can change really quickly. So I won't be surprised at all if the Nationals win, if the Nationals sweep. But on balance, I think the Cubs will pull it out.
In how many games?
Oh, I guess the logic that they hewed out on Effectively Wild not so long ago was it's got to get to 2-1 at some point if you think the teams are evenly matched, and then you expect the better team to win. So I'll say in 4. The Cubs finish it at Wrigley. Of course, if they lose that game and it comes back to Washington for game 5, that changes the dynamic somewhat. But for now, I'll pick the Cubs in 4. That's never gotten me in trouble before.
Well, Matt, we probably could cover another, you know, we could do another 2 hours on the series every bit, but I think this is a good time for us to cut it here, and a good spot for your plugs here where people can find your work on Twitter, where they can find your new venture and anything and everything you want to plug.
Sure. So I write at Baseball Prospectus a couple of times a week, baseballprospectus.com, and it'll be pretty active all through the playoffs, obviously. This is a time for good baseball writing and people who look at the game critically. I also have a newsletter that I started just a week or two ago, or coming up on 2 weeks. It's called Penning Bull. It's a play on words from Bull Penning, Brian Kenny's beloved toy. And it's really just a regular newsletter where I get things out that don't necessarily fit at BP, or that I think I can write maybe for a quicker turnaround in that space. Subscriptions are $11.11 a year. I know it's a weird number, but it's meaningful to me, and a portion of that does go to certain charities that are close to my heart. So you can check out all of that at penningbull.com. I'm at MA Trueblood on Twitter, and then, yeah, Baseball Prospectus.
Well, full disclosure, I'm a subscriber to your newsletter, a big fan of your work at BP, and I highly recommend people check out your new venture and definitely follow you on Twitter to keep up with all your writing. So, Matt, thank you so very much for coming on. I wish you had a little bit more happier news for us Nationals fans who are going to listen to this. But that said, I'm going to hope you're wrong, but I think you did a great job helping break down this series. So thanks for coming on this week.
Yeah, I love to do it. I love your show, and best of luck to you.
Well, thank you too. And Matt, hopefully maybe we'll have this conversation again in a couple weeks when the series is over.
Sounds like fun.
All right, well, be well, my friend.
The Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. Yeah. The Baron, speaking for the awareness. Truth has been spoken, the people say it's apparent. Wake up every day to the voice of the leader. The home run, strikeout, the Baron, the teacher. I am a natural, my podcast has been the national. Bryce Harper power, Ken Griffey with attitude. No more than most, I am built for the stage. Every time I speak facts without turning the page, let me explain, I'm like Babe Ruth, I call the shots. Speaking to all my people, this message will never stop. Home run, every show, bringing in every fact. This feeling will overcome and I'm never turning it back. The Baron, the people's podcast in this win. The benefactor of benefit, know the truth is within. The Baron, speaking for awareness, the truth has been spoken. The people always say it's apparent, you feel me? The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The Baron, speaking for the awareness. Truth has been spoken, the people say it's apparent. Wake up every day to the voice of the leader. The home run, strikeout, the Baron, the teacher. I am a natural, my podcast has been the national. Bryce Harper power, Ken Griffey with attitude. No more than most, I am built for the stage. Every time I speak facts without turning the page, let me explain, I'm like Babe Ruth, I call the shots. Speaking to all my people, this message will never stop. Home run, every show, bringing in every fact. This feeling will overcome and I'm never turning it back. The Baron, the people's podcast in this win. The benefactor of benefit, know the truth is within. The Baron, speaking for awareness, the truth has been spoken. The people always say it's apparent, you feel me? The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that.